Day Zero update for April 29th, 2018. I'm Filippo DeNofo.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
I'm Teresa Sammons.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Danrev Victorio.
Yeah, it's a very interesting week this week, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Couple of big Nintendo stories and a lot of small Nintendo stories, so I think this one's probably going to end up being called the Mostly Nintendo episode.
Yep.
It's mostly Nintendo. That's kind of how that works. So we're going to get into that. Some very interesting news for Switch owners. We'll talk about that later in the show. And lots of other fun stuff coming. But before we get there, let's catch up on what we've been doing this week. Because I think some of us have actually been playing some stuff that's actually kind of interesting. I'm not one of them. So, I've been playing Mega Man Legacy Collection 2. It's old. It's Mega Man. Mega Man 8 is... I don't know. I kind of like it. A lot of people seem to hate on it. I don't know why.
Is that the one that was released on the PlayStation?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have that too. I guess the reason people didn't like it was because it felt kind of like a step back after Mega Man X and Mega Man X 2.
Possibly.
I mean, it's not Mega Man X. It's the original Mega Man. I don't get it.
Yeah,
so.
It's not X, it's the original series. I will say it was definitely easier than the last
one. Oh, yes. It is way easier than past Mega Man games. Yeah. That might be the reason people are not as keen on it.
Yeah.
Because, let's be honest, it's not Mega Man unless you're tearing your hair out and wanting to put your foot through the screen.
Yeah. But, games were getting a little more expensive back then, so maybe they decided to make it easier for TV owners, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Either way.
So what games are on that collection?
Legacy 2, I think it has Mega Man 7, 8. Where's the other ones? Yeah, I'll get the list.
Does it also have that Bass and Treble game?
Yeah.
Yeah. The one that I don't think was... Technically was like for the longest time never released in the U.S.
But they're good collections, and I think you should definitely pick them up. They usually go on sale with the Capcom bundles, and we got one of those today, and Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 is actually in that. It's got the four games included are Mega Man 7, 8, 9, 10. So, yeah, no Bass and Treble, apparently. So, I was wrong there. I'll eat crow. But, 9 and 10 on the PS4 were kind of... Well, on the PS3 when they originally came out, were kind of a return to the let's kick you in the face as often as possible type Mega Man
games. Yes.
So, yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what Mega Man 11 turns out to be. Hopefully kind of somewhere in between, because there's a balance there that needs to be struck, I feel. Good games, good collections. Check them out if you ever get the chance to. So how about you, Brandon?
I finished Yakuza 6, so I went and took that over to GameStop and decided to load up on the fighting game. So I got copies of both Guilty Gear Revelator 2 and Under Night in Birth. So, loaded up on the Arc System Works, as you can see. So I haven't gotten a chance to get into Under Night in Birth just yet because I've been loading up on the Guilty Gear.
Right.
What can I say? It's Guilty Gear. I will say they've definitely, like, one of the things I do like about what they're doing with Zerd is that they're basically adding, like, little details to each stage with each update. So, like, you're fighting in the middle of the street, and then the second round comes around, and then there's, like, these two dudes from a nearby hotel holding up a sign saying, "Please, God, stop!"
Yeah. I kind of like those things. Like KOF used to do that sort of thing where the stages would change between rounds. And it was always like little tiny things, like either the time of day would change or like some people were where they wouldn't have been before. So, yeah, it's fun stuff.
But, Yeah, and of course, you know, it's I don't know if everybody remembers this. Back, I don't think it was last week, the week before that, I put up the as my pick of the week. I had the Tokitoki television on YouTube where they did the segment with Daisuke, and you know, seeing his work, you know, his whole work process, because Daisuke, even though he has a team underneath him, he's pretty much involved in just about every aspect of the game.
Yeah, he wears many hats, but unlike a lot of people, he wears them all at the same time. So.
He does the writing, he does the art design and the art direction. All of the pretty much the character art, if you're in the on the box or inside the manual or whatever you're saying, that's all him. You know, the music obviously is like the probably the big thing from the Guilty Gear games he's known for, because he is one damn good guitar player. And also like the programming, the game design, the art, the audio production, sound design, he's involved in all of it. If you go back to the first Guilty Gear and look at the credit rolls, Daisuke is in like 8 out of 10
Of them, yeah.
position involved. So with that, I have been doing that. Under Night Inbirth, that is actually a collaboration with French Bread and Type Moon. So I haven't had, but I haven't had a chance. I've been told that it is amazing. So. I definitely want to give it a chance. And that's pretty much it. I really want to give Fantasy Strike a try, but apparently it's not out yet.
Yeah, there's beta coming up, so
Yeah.
be able to
All
look at
right.
that.
But that's what I've been up to. What about you, Teresa?
I have been playing Sword of Mana.
Oh.
Going back many, many,
Many
many
years.
years.
Many, many years.
I never did finish Final Fantasy Adventure on the old Game Boy, and I find myself needing something to do during my short lunch break while I'm at work. Work is a sore subject at the moment, but it's almost over. So I've been playing that, and then, you know, it's also fun to pick up and play a little bit here and there whenever I find a few free moments. So, yeah, enjoying that, which is great because I have long since forgotten what the storyline of Secret of Mana was. So I'll probably pick that up after this. I'll probably do the Steam release of it.
Yep, that's probably the best one to get.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's short, but hey, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, well, it's a good game. Good game regardless. Okay, so how about you, Chris?
Okay, so I played the new demo for Pixel Junk Monsters 2, and it is quite good. The demo itself doesn't have much in it. It's one level and two of the three difficulties they offer for it. But it actually plays pretty well, since the whole thing is in 3D now. There are hills, and so they give your Tiki Man a jump button. So you can sort of jump up onto higher areas, as well as when there are enemies sort of running through the paths, you can just jump over the horde, which is real nice. Instead of having, 'cause like in the original, you would have to just wait for them to go by, or your towers to create a gap for you to get through, and risk, you know, hitting one of them and losing a bunch of gold. Here you can just kind of jump over them, which is pretty nice. It works pretty similarly to the original. I'm trying to think. But yeah, there's only three towers they have in the demo, so not too much in the way of new stuff. But yeah, the second difficulty was a little bit tougher, but not hard at all. But one of the new things they added is some cosmetic stuff. You earn these crystal currency, I think it is, for just hitting milestones in the game. So like the first level I beat got me some of that, I think like 20. Then I reached, I think, 200 enemies killed, and that gave me some more, and I bought a new shell for my Tiki Man's pack. They also have masks, and there's some nice designs there, as well as just weird stuff. My Tiki Man now has a shell on it that looks more like a shield, with a design that's not quite Zelda style, but sort of there. But yeah, that game looks really nice. Plays pretty well, and I'm looking forward to the release in about a month. I'm hoping there's a nice discount for pre-order. That would be real nice. But otherwise, yeah, that just made me realize that's still another month out, so I gotta wait. I also played the Defiance 2050 beta they put out for people that signed up for it. This is a follow-up to the original Defiance game, which was kind of a open-world MMO that was also on consoles and PC.
The one that was kind of tied into a TV show.
Yeah, it was tied into it. Not so much directly, like you weren't in the same area that they were in the show.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, it was the same world, I guess.
Yeah.
They talked a little bit about things that happened in Defiance. But here it's a ways after that. I don't know what the timeline is, but the two main characters from that show show up at the very beginning when you're getting all set up. Because you're on a ship going towards, I forget where it's going to, but surprise, surprise, it gets shot down. And you manage to get out with your pod just in time, but get separated from everybody. So they just sort of scramble to get everybody together again. I've not seen those two characters back yet, but yeah, so the game itself is kind of an open world third-person shooter. It controls pretty well. It looks fine. It's not going to be a looker. It's going to be free to play from the start, so I think it's going to be a big boost compared to the original, which was paid up front.
Yeah,
I think it was like a Elder Scrolls Online is now, where it was paid up front and then it was free to play monthly after that. But now it's going to be just free to play from the start. And the one thing it does really well compared to stuff like Destiny, is that you have like the open world to run around and do missions in, but you don't have to group up with other players to just do co-op. So as you take on quests, you might go to the same place as a couple other people and you just all just take on the enemies as they come. And you all get credit for it. They do like a little high score thing at the end, show like who did the most work and whatnot. And I think give you a little bit of bonus for that, but yeah, it's a really nice way of doing ambient co-op without having to go through like the official like matchmaking stuff or buddying up or anything like that. You just go around and do stuff. If you happen to have a couple of people with you, you know, all the better. And it just works pretty well. It takes place in San Francisco. So I think where I was starting at, it was, I forget what it says, up north of Sausalito. But I noticed like Sausalito, San Francisco, they mentioned a couple other areas from around there. I did not get to that part yet. I think they block that much progress in the beta here, but it looks like a pretty big area to go explore. But yeah, I'm not sure when that's going to be coming out. They just did, I think, their second closed beta. And yeah, seems like they're giving out codes. GameSpot has a bunch for PS4, Xbox One. Like, it's also coming to PC as well. Yeah, I don't know. Like, sometime this summer is what they're saying it's going to be out. That'd be a pretty good time for this game. So when there's a little bit of a lull, here's a nice little free-to-play thing that is doing some things that Destiny doesn't really do. But yeah, that was pretty good. I picked up a new game this week, Slayaway Camp. They have a bundle on the PS4 that's on sale for $7.49. That includes the soundtrack as well as some avatars plus the full game.
Mm-hmm.
It is a puzzle game inspired by these sort of classic horror games. So you play the movie monster. I think the first couple of they set up all the levels as scenes in a movie. Mm. So they'll have a lot of like set pieces, like, oh, here they are around the campfire, in a cabin, sort of stuff. And you move your character around by essentially like sliding across. It would be like a rook in chess. It just goes in one direction the entire way.
Okay.
Mm. You can't do anything but go as far in that direction as it can go. And so you just try to get in position to hit one of the teens, and you'll take them out. Sometimes it'll just do a generic kill. Other times it'll go into these special animations and show them like chopping their head off. Other things. The art style is very much more cartoonish, almost kind of Minecraft-ish, except it's kind of every character is sort of a rectangular prism, I guess.
Okay.
So it's very stylish. You can turn off the gore, in a sense. They have a filter to sort of turn it on, down to PG.
Yeah.
Or there's like several layers of R-rated stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, it works pretty well. I've done a few movies that are very much, what movie would be with Jason in it?
Yeah, Friday the 13th.
Yeah, it like a couple of those like around the camps. The one I was just on involved his mom.
Hmm.
That being a thing, I unlocked a couple others. That's there's like a Santa sleigh, very much a Santa thing, as well as one that is very much My Bloody Valentine. There are a bunch of sort of skins to buy for other movie monsters that includes pretty much anything you can think of, even all the way down to like Gremlin.
Yeah.
So there's lots of stuff there. As you do these different puzzles, you gain gold, which you can spend in the shop for these gore packs, which just adds a new like mini game they do between scenes.
Okay.
That just shows you another neat little like custom kill animation. I'm going to put a link for this thing so you can sort of see the style I'm talking about. And yeah, it just works pretty well. It gets pretty hard at times. I have one that I am working on, the Santa's sleigh, that I can take out all the kids in there, but I can't figure out how to get the way to the exit.
Mm.
So there's like an exit portal in each level that you have to get to after you kill everybody. And sometimes it's tough. You have to figure out how to affect the teens, because if you land a spot right next to them, they will run off in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is to their death. Other times it's a way to set you up so that you can get yourself to other teens or to the exit, as has been the case for the last couple levels I've been working on. So it definitely gets really tough in a way that is just satisfying when you figure it out, like, oh, I had to set it up this way, that sort of thing.
Hmm.
But yeah, it works really well. And I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. They made a specific, I think, Friday the 13th version of it, which I've heard good things about, but also that's like the beauty of Slayway Camp being more of a generic homage to that stuff is that they can have all of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's some really nice, there's some really nice kills. There's like one where they kill them with a lamp. They knock the shade off and kill them with the lamp, so their head is on top as the new bulb. There's a bunch of silly stuff like that. And I've been playing more Vostok Inc. I'm on the last area, which involves a being called the Architect, which is kind of, I guess, like Space God.
Yeah.
Who has been watching your exploits in the other systems and now is, I don't know what the hell his point is. He's like, he's almost just taunting us in a way. I don't know. I don't really care about the story. It's real dumb. But yeah, I'm working on getting up the last few trophies and getting the platinum on that. It's not a hard one. It's just time intensive.
Yeah.
I've currently got it running on my PS4 while I'm doing this, so it can just grind out more money for me. I can do some more stuff once I get back to it. But yeah, that's pretty good. I think it's also on sale right now. Most places, so yeah, I recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it.
Okay. Danrum, yeah, how about you?
Oh yeah, I've been playing God of War. It's gotten pretty hard now. Like, I thought I got a hang of the controls, but you know, once they start having enemies gang up on you, it gets a little difficult. I think the main thing I'm having trouble with is really having Atreus really help me out with his arrows and stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I'll just power through it. But I didn't expect to have like this much difficulty dying. So yeah, I'm pretty sure I've died more in this game than any previous God of War combined. oh well. I also finished Ni No Kuni 2 last week. And finish really isn't really putting it right, because, like, you know, I'm nowhere near done with the whole kingdom thing. But I just needed a little bit of a break from it, and God of War is providing that break. So
yeah.
Other than that, that's pretty much been it.
All right. So yeah, that's quite an eventful week. So yeah, we're coming into a new month, and that means new PlayStation Plus and Games with Gold games. Kind of a mixed bag on both fronts here.
Yeah.
Let's kind of start with PlayStation Plus here, which, you want to walk through these, Chris?
Yeah, so for the PS4, we have Beyond Two Souls, which I liked a lot on the PS3. I'm actually kind of looking forward to checking it out on PS4. I know a lot of people hate it, but whatever. giving people a chance to check out at least the last Quantic Dream game before the new one comes out.
Yeah.
I think the demo for Detroit Become Human also came out, I think, last week.
Yeah.
So there's also a nice way to check that out as well. The other one is Rayman Legends, which is really good.
Yep. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Four-player co-op, online challenge modes, all that sort of stuff. I think it even has a bunch of levels from the original game.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to like there. The PS3, there's Risen 3, Titan Lords. I believe that is a Eurojank RPG.
Yep, it's very jank.
Yep. What is this? Is this THQ? Is that no, Deep Silver. Well, yeah. That's THQ now.
Yeah.
So they own it already.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck with it.
Yeah. The other game is Eat Them, which is actually one I like a lot. That was a Sony published game on the PS3 that is kind of like a kaiju game, where you're going around making your own monster. Almost kind of like it's not as good as the Spore Creator, but in a sense of the different parts you swap in and out changes how you move around, how you do your attacks, all that sort of stuff. And you're also supposed to just go around and eat people. So I believe that's how you get health back. And it's a pretty fun game. A little bit of King of the Monsters and kaiju stuff all in there.
Mm-hmm.
And a really nice kind of cel-shaded art style that works well for that. On the Vita, we got Furmans, which, if I'm looking at this right, this is... Yeah, this is a Hosmark game, a game they made for Beat Shapers. Makes a lot of mobile stuff, and this is kind of one of those. I don't really know how to describe this kind of game. It's kind of a pinball-ish kind of game, except you're controlling the ball, and you're going around collecting stuff in each level. Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing to kind of describe. A lot of, yeah, I don't know how to describe it. It's a neat little game, but it's like a $6 game.
Yeah.
So it's about on par with what you expect out of this sort of thing. Hmm. The other game is King Oddball, which is a 10-tons game. I believe you played a good bit of that.
Yeah, I played a ton of that.
Yeah, it's a good game. It's cross-buy on PS4, PS3, and Vita. You can get it on any platform you have. Hmm. It's a physics puzzle game.
Yep.
Like Angry Birds, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like reverse Angry Birds, because instead of flinging things from a slingshot, you're swinging them from a giant ball.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who's angry at everything else for some reason?
Yeah. Yep. And that is it's. They also mentioned here that for PS Plus members, if you subscribe through the PS4 app of Spotify, you get 10% off the monthly fee. It's not huge, but if you're already doing it, it's a good way to get a little bit of a discount.
Yeah, so that's PlayStation 4. Not so bad.
Yep. Let's see. Xbox, they have on May 1st, we got Super Mega Baseball 2.
Yeah, which is actually launching with Game of Gold.
Yeah, that's out on May 1st. I believe on PS4 and Xbox One, it'll be free on Xbox One for Gold members, and that should be a pretty good baseball game.
Yeah, the first one was great. So.
Yep. I believe they've added some more customization stuff and some more modes into it, so it's a good one. See, on the BC front, it's Sega Vintage Collection Streets of Rage.
Yep.
I'm not sure if that's a great version of that game.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
It was ported, but
yeah.
Probably fine.
I played it. It's alright.
Is it just Streets of Rage, or does it have others in it?
It's just Streets of Rage.
Okay.
Wow.
Exit of the screenshot that shows like Streets of Rage 2 on it.
Yeah. It's I think that.
Or is that one of those things where you have to buy the other stuff?
Yeah, you might have to buy the other stuff. I know that. When I got it on the Xbox 360, they were separate. It was Streets of Rage, and then they had the second one come out later. So. So there's that.
Yeah. On May 16th, for Xbox One, it's Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, which is a good game.
Yeah, very good game.
Yep. And the last Kojima Metal Gear Solid game.
Yep.
It's the last one you have to care about.
Yep. And the last one before Konami went and fucked it up. So.
Yep.
Or the one where Konami went and fucked it up.
Yeah, partially fucked it up, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that enhanced?
I don't think so.
Yeah, yet. Well, probably won't be.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to let people go back to that. And the BC game on the 16th is Vanquish.
Yeah, which is good. Really good.
Very silly third-person shooter.
Yeah.
Where you get around by sliding on your knees
all
over the place.
Yeah, pretty good for the Xbox One this month, actually.
Yep, some good stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you need free games, there you go. If you haven't played Metal Gear Solid 5 and you own an Xbox One, well, there you go. You got a really good time ahead of you there.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of head trips along the way. So, there. Anyways. So, moving on to our topics of the week, we'll start with, we got a release date for H1Z1 on PS4, which is coming May 22nd, another entry into the crowded Battle Royale genre.
Conveniently, they're not releasing on Xbox One for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
I assume to get out of the way of the platform that has PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and Fortnite. And sort of go for the platform that just has Fortnite.
Yeah. It just has Fortnite.
Hmm. Yeah. This is about 2 years after they said it was going to be coming out originally on these consoles.
Yeah. Cool. It's taken a little while, hasn't it?
Yeah. And the game has changed a good bit. They ended up splitting it up into H1Z1, the Battle Royale game, and Just Survive what you probably thought was H1Z1, zombie survival game.
Yeah.
This is just going to be the Battle Royale thing. It's going to be free to play. So, hey, PUBG, you're missing out again.
Yeah, which is weird because the mobile version of PUBG is free to play, so go figure.
And just not being on the biggest platform is also hurting them.
Yep.
Letting these others just take all the people. Make it harder for them to want to pay up the $30 when it comes out.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're going to have an early beta for people. Go to h1z1.com/PlayStation4. You can sign up to get a code for that. They also got a pre-order for it for some bonus stuff. I don't think it's probably going to be worth it, but hey, if you really want to get some stuff for this one,
yeah,
you can do that. I think it's like $20. You get some extra items and such. But yeah, it's nice to have another game out there.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we're going to end up hitting, you know, peak Battle Royale saturation fairly soon. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. I think Fortnite is just kind of eating everybody's lunch at this point.
Yep.
Kind of just by being the only one out there.
Yeah. In other news, Humble Bundle is doing a Sega Cross Capcom bundle. It's a console, so PS3, PS4.
Yep. PS3, PS4, and Vita.
And Vita, yeah.
Yeah, so let's see. The pay what you want tier has Dead Rising for the PS4, Crazy Taxi for the PS3, and Dust Force and Super Monkey Banana Splits for the Vita. The Beat the Average, which right now is at 1190, or the average is 1189. To beat it is 1190. You get Resident Evil for the PS4,
yeah.
Mega Man Legacy Collection for the PS4, Resident Evil Code Veronica X on the PS4, and Alien Isolation for the PS4. And the Sonic Generations and Binary Domain for the PS3. Those are good. And if you beat, pay more than $15, you get Dead Rising 2 for the PS4 and Valkyria Chronicles Remastered for the PS4, which that's actually a good price to get all that stuff.
Yeah, if you go $15, that's actually that's a lot of value for $15.
Yep. And along with that, they're also giving out discount codes to get a couple other games on sale. If you beat the average, which would be $11.90 or more. You get half off, a code for half off Dead Rising 4, code for half off Yakuza 0, a code for 40% off Resident Evil 7 Gold Edition, and a code for 40% off Valkyria Revolution. I think all of those would be $30 with that code. I think that's how that works out. So, yeah, that's a pretty good price for Yakuza 0.
Yeah.
And probably Resident Evil 7. The other two you probably don't need.
Yeah, you can skip Dead Rising 4.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of people on various forums giving out those codes. So you might not even have to spend the money for them.
Yeah, it's like,
so people just want the games themselves.
Yeah. So yeah, check
let's that see out. How they've got over 500,000 in donations for that.
Yeah.
44,000 purchases, so that's doing pretty well.
How long is left on this?
Let's see if I can figure that out. 8 days, yeah, just under 9 days.
Yeah.
So it should end on, I assume, 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern time on whatever 9 days from now is.
Yeah.
The 7th?
7th, I think.
7th or 8th?
Yeah. 8th.
If you wait until the 8th, you're probably fucked.
Yeah.
Just buy it as soon as you can, if you want that stuff.
Yeah, I really wish Humble would do more of these console bundles, because the last one that they did was the THQ one, which was also really good.
Yep.
Yeah, kind of wish they'd do more of these, so I think I'll probably end up picking this one up. I looked at the PSN sales this week, and it wasn't anything really that struck me, so I'll probably end up getting that. Another Sega news, Shining Resonance Refrain is coming out July 10th to the West. This is the new action RPG rhythm style game coming out from Sega, obviously.
Yeah,
and it looks okay, I guess.
Yeah,
it just kind of looks okay. Maybe it's one of those games that plays better and more fun than it actually looks. But
yeah.
I'm thinking if they're trying to reestablish the Shining series, they probably should just go back to their roots and do the tactical strategy games, which is what most people remember them for.
So. Yeah. they seem to be just taking the cheaper route and remastering a PS3 game.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is out on everything, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and Steam.
Yeah. So interesting stuff there. For fighting game fans on the Switch, Guilty Gear Double X, well, Double Crossed, basically, Accent Core, plus R, which is one of the longest names ever, is going to the Switch. Don't know when, but it is.
Yeah, that's basically all the announcement is, hey, it's coming.
Yep.
I guess the other thing is it's going to include the Korean-exclusive soundtrack of Guilty Gear Double Cross hashtag Reload. Which was composed by musicians Shinhei Chul, passed away 2014.
I didn't even know there was a Korean exclusive soundtrack.
So, yep.
Yeah.
So you got something to look forward to then.
Yeah. Now I just got to get a Switch. So, yeah. In news that's just kind of annoying and sad because it's, you know, coming from to a really, you know, great game. But this is not new because this has been happening to GTA for years now.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of songs being removed from Grand Theft Auto 4.
Yep.
Yep.
Is this like a rights issue or something?
Yeah.
Their license, their music licenses expired. They were 10 years old.
Yep. And it's kind of a testament to how long this game has been viable as a game people want to buy. Cause it's happening on PS3, Xbox 360, Steam as well. And a bunch of the Russian music is gone, as well as a bunch of the stuff that people like David Bowie song here, Fascination, there's Smashing Pumpkins, Stevie Nicks, Electric Light Orchestra, yeah. AC/DC, The Doors, Jefferson Starship, Iron Maiden. Yeah. Some stuff people would actually know. Though at this point, I believe all those platforms have, or just, you can listen to music any way you want.
Yeah.
Pretty much at this point.
Yeah. And if you're doing it on Steam, I'm pretty sure some modders are going to do a restoration patch that puts them back in. So,
yeah.
That's going to happen. Because I know I have the PC version, the Xbox 360 I got somewhere. So maybe I just play it and not update it. That'd be a thing.
You have to go offline, I think.
Yeah, if you, there's still people playing it online, I guess. But yeah, it's weird, because they are replacing some of the tracks in there, particularly in the Vos Discotheque station that got really, really hammered.
Yeah.
So, but it looks like they're kind of, replacing some of them, but there's still a lot that's going to be, the absence
is
going to be felt.
So. That's going to remind me that there was music in that game. Because I don't remember listening to the radio too much.
Yeah, you were too busy running from the cops. That's basically how that works. Yeah.
Yeah, just getting annoyed by the game itself.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's strange driving controls that didn't quite work right. Yeah. Anyway.
And the lack of checkpoints.
Yeah, that too. GTA 5 fixed most of that. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, licensing. It sucks.
Yep.
So in other news, we talked about the Steam's privacy changes last week. Steam Spy was going to be a victim of that. They were going to shut down. It turns out that's not going to happen now. They are going to be coming back, but they're going to be changing a little bit how they actually operate. So, yeah, they're going to be implementing some machine learning algorithms to the algorithms. Words are hard sometimes. To compensate for the lack of data that they're going to have now. So they're going to be doing a lot more extrapolation to figure out what the hell's going on in there.
Yeah, he says right now it's not very accurate. I have the data for around 70 games from different developers, and for 90% of them, new Steam spies within 10% margin of error. Pointed out that Frostpunk predicted 252,000 was basically on the money at 250,000. But also some crazy outliers where the difference between the estimates and the real data was about fivefold.
Oof. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how they can get around there, because really the usefulness of Steam Spy was figuring out who was actually playing these games, or more importantly, just, you know, if a game was popular or not, or if it was just a place for Russian bot farmers to farm trading cards.
Especially for small devs that want to see sort of what they were jumping into if they were going to bring their game to Steam.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to be a lot more difficult now. What I'm hoping is that they get their algorithm good enough so that, you know, these smaller devs can have a look and see, well, okay, it's not going to be probably exact, but it's probably going to be close enough.
So. It had to be less VG charts and something a little bit more respectable.
Yeah. So.
Did you see the thing with the NPD where there was a thing that popped up on the list? At the very bottom was Sonic the Hedgehog 2 for the Game Gear. Sold one copy last month.
Okay.
And somebody for the movie was like, all right, I have to know where the hell this came from. And I think the assumption is probably from a Toys R Us.
Probably.
That found it in the back room and put it up on sale as part of their clearancing.
Damn, somebody got a deal if they picked up a new in-box Sonic 2 and for the Game Gear. Jeez,
pretty much.
So, all right, so let's get to the Nintendo portion of the show, and we'll start with what was actually kind of big news. Nintendo president is stepping down to be replaced by Shuntaro Furukawa. He was the head of the Pokemon company, for a good few years. He's been at Nintendo since 1994. Apparently this actually doesn't have anything to do with Kimishima's performance. This is just Kimishima acknowledging he's too freaking old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would also like to point out that Kotaku, goddamn, hire a copy editor.
Yes, please, for the love of God.
Was it that bad?
Extremely.
I spotted at least four typos and grammatical errors. Like, goddamn, people.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Yeah, Kimishima was announced as Nintendo's president in 2015 after previously president Satoru Iwata passed away.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, maybe I should hit them up after the school year is over.
Yeah.
Just be posting everything. Yeah, removed the LY on previous at the event.
Yeah.
Yep, so...
you guys are stupid, hire me.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll go over pretty well, but yeah. So, kind of interesting news. Furukawa was directly involved with the Switch launch and the sales going, the sales of that. So he's kind of already familiar with how Nintendo is operating.
Yeah.
So it seems like a pretty good choice to put him there. Plus, he's only like 5 years older than I am, so that's a little bit better and probably would kind of understand what people are actually looking for.
Sure.
Okay, cool. I've seen this guy around.
Yeah.
He has a bowl cut.
Yep. So,
Why was Pat not happy about this?
I have no idea.
I mean, the main thing was that Kimishima was supposed to be a transitional guy anyway. He wasn't gonna hold this post for long.
Yeah.
His job was pretty much just to make sure the ship was still moving, and to be honest, when you're at that kind of position, it's really best to keep your hands off. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Kimishima did a good job. He got shepherded the Switch in.
Yeah.
It took off, now he's, he's 68 now, so it's like, okay, well, I can retire if I want to, so that's basically what he's going
to
do.
He's sidestepping.
Yeah. So he's going to be taking on an advisory position because, in Japan, nobody ever actually retires.
No.
Yep.
So, yeah. So he's going to be doing that.
I think as long as Nintendo maintains their marketing strategy, and it's been incredible, and they'll be fine. So, yeah. And hiring the guy who handles Pokemon really shouldn't make anything bad at all.
unless Nintendo starts to focus more on Pokemon to the detriment of anything else.
They kind of focus on Pokemon a lot. There's a ton of spinoffs.
Yeah,
including the worst Picross game.
Yeah,
it's the Pokemon one.
But
yeah, you're right there.
That's offensive to me as a Picross game.
Chris,
like, oh, you threw this free to play crap onto this game, and it's all Pokemon faces. That's just boring.
Yeah. So we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think Nintendo will probably be fine under his leadership.
Yeah.
You know, if we had Pat on, he might be able to tell us why he was a little upset about this deal, but we'll ask him next week if he's on the
show. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we'll find out.
Yeah. So, yeah. And we got sales numbers for the SNES Classic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, did I say it right, or is that something?
It's the Super NES Classic Edition, or SNES Classic, or
Super Nintendo
SNES. Let's go with that.
Fuck you.
Nope.
The ain't nobody gonna fucking find it.
Yeah,
Classic Edition.
Yeah, you can't buy it. But it somehow has managed to sell 5.28 million units worldwide. A little over a million of those since January 2018. So apparently, some people are finding it. I think it would.
Yeah, didn't, are you guys friends with, Meta? He, lives in, what the heck?
Yeah, he's
Texas. He found one.
Yeah, he just kind of walked into his Target, and there was, well, two of them were, like, on hold for other people, and there was one there, so he's like, yeah, I'm gonna have that.
Yeah.
Because I'm never gonna see one again.
Right?
It's like it's like seeing a unicorn in the wild. It's like, it doesn't happen. So... yeah, I've been looking online for one of these. It's impossible to find. And Nintendo has said they're going to be ramping production up on these. So
yeah, that's what they always say.
Yeah. So, you know, ramping production means that instead of making 15 of them, they're going to make 20. So
yeah,
okay. But yeah, good sales. It shows that people do want it. Just make more of them so people can actually buy.
Please.
Yeah. So what were you getting here? Oh yeah, Nintendo Online Services has been something that apparently is going to happen. They haven't actually bothered to tell us much about it, but apparently we'll get all the details in May at some point. So this is an announcement of an announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much all we know is it's $20 a year, and that's about it.
Yeah, you may or may not get some free games. Yeah, they may or may not stay on your account.
Get some online. What was the Dr. Mario?
Yeah,
online Dr. Mario
online, and
waiting 30 years to do that.
Yeah. So that's the announcements that we are waiting to get.
Dr. Mario is a menace to society. He's been pushing those pills. So we got a problem here in the U.S. teaching the kids to push those pills on people.
Yep.
Oh,
gotta fit
God.
Them all in.
Yeah, twist them in very interesting ways. Yeah.
Get all the pills you can, kids. Because they just disappear like candy.
I'm just wondering if that was ever a controversy in the 90s.
Probably. I don't remember that.
I mean, either. But Daryl.
It was a video
game. We were way more lax in the 90s, even though we were slightly uptight, yeah.
Yeah, there were no boobs, so it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as there weren't nipples, you know, we were fine.
So that's a pre-announcement. We'll talk about what the actual details are once we get them. But we do have Nintendo's E3 plans, and they're pretty much what we expected them to be. I'm going to start off with a Splatoon tournament on the 11th. It's an invitational tournament, so... Yeah, you'll be able to watch people play Splatoon at a high level, hopefully. As long as their stream holds and they don't DMCA themselves.
Yep.
I think that actually happened. So,
would not be surprised.
Yeah. And then on the 12th, they're going to have their presentation. So, yeah, that noon Eastern, 9 p.m., 9 a.m. rather, Pacific. It's going to be... looks like about an hour-ish presentation that's going to talk about games for the Switch and possibly 3DS. We'll see. And then, of course, they're going to do their Treehouse live stream, which, you know, everybody loves. It's nice to just tune into that and see what they're doing.
Yep.
Those people at the Treehouse are, well, they're kind of really genuine about what they do. They really, mm-hmm. they genuinely enjoy their jobs. So Hey.
Unless they have to try to make a Pokemon stream sound really interesting. It's like, oh, they're running around and they're fighting the Pokemons. There's like 5 new Pokemon. Here's their abilities.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God. Just tell me more about the man with the Hawaiian shirt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
That's the most interesting part.
Do you think we'll get details on Pokemon Switch?
I would assume so if it's coming this year.
Yeah.
So. I think the fact that they're doing the whole online thing like a month beforehand shows that E3 will probably be all games again, so I would be surprised if Pokemon wasn't on there somehow.
Yeah. So there's going to be that, and then there's going to be a Smash Brothers tournament. So, yay.
Yep.
That's a thing.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, so that's their E3 plans. Yeah, pretty substantial there. They're going to have a good presence there at E3, which, you know, I'm not sure. What they didn't say is if they're actually going to be at the event. Well, they will be as far as, you know, booths and stuff, but not they're not going to do a presentation from there. So, yeah, Nintendo doing what Nintendo does.
Find out how many Pokemon are going to be in this Smash Brothers game.
All of the Pokemon.
Pretty much all of them, and probably a few you didn't even know existed.
I just want that trash Pokemon in there. That's the only good one.
The trash Pokemon. Yeah. And finally, the other big Nintendo Switch story of the week was that the Nintendo Switch has been hacked. And boy, has it been hacked.
It's not even their fault, actually. It's NVIDIA's fault.
Well, yeah, it's NVIDIA's fault-ish, but this is actually a hardware defect. Well, not really a hardware defect. It's an implementation problem. It stems from how the CPU is set up at the factory. There was a programming error in the CPU's microcode, which is a one-shot deal. You set it up once, and you're stuck with it. You can't patch that.
Yep.
Now. Yeah, this is bad for them because this also affects other Tegra devices like, you know, the Google, Pixel C, which is Android tablet. Anything that runs the Tegra X or I think several other generations of Tegras will have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
The only way for Nintendo to remedy this is to actually fix that bug at the factory,
which
I am sure by now they have actually started doing. Because this was reported to them 3 months ago.
Mm.
So, if you're going to get a Switch and you're looking for homebrew, you better get one now, because chances are going forward, this is going to be fixed. Mm. Actually taking advantage of it is a little bit tricky right now, because it involves shorting 2 pins on the connector. Yeah, that's a little bit difficult to do. It's not like difficult. It's just, you don't want to do that every time you have to boot the system, which is what you have to do here. But, it does let you boot to an external device. There is Failover Flow have put out a distribution of Linux with full touch and 3D acceleration, so that's working.
Huh.
They've got Dolphin running on it already. So it can play GameCube games. Which is something the Switch should probably have been able to do from the start.
Yeah.
Anyway. And what else? I think somebody's got Doom 3 running, presumably on Linux. Yeah. So, the Switch is hacked. Let the homebrew begin. I would probably advise you, if this is something that's interesting to you and you can afford it, actually get a second Switch for this.
Yep.
So Nintendo is kind of notorious. If they, you know, detect this kind of thing, then they'll just ban your console or just nuke your account completely.
Yep.
Which has happened many, many times to many, many people. So be careful about that. But I'm very interested to see where this goes. The X1 is a pretty powerful chip as far as, you know, mobile processors go. It's a little old now, but still pretty potent.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to seeing what homebrew devs end up doing. You know, pretty sure all of the emulators are going to end up being ported to it. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then you can have your own virtual console.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right. So I wanted to close out the show with kind of a topic that's maybe near and dear to some of our hearts, because we grew up in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Nintendo in the 90s. Because this was a... It's like Nintendo had hit their stride by this point.
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s, they kind of re-jump-started the market, video game market, after the crash in North America.
Yep.
And they had basically turned into a juggernaut of gaming by that point.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 90s, Sega was very keen on getting in on that, and they had issues with Nintendo, which ended up as one of the most amazing rivalries in console history, I would hazard to guess.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was a lot of, not only like the ads that we're all familiar with, you know, Genesis does with Nintendo Don't, or the infamous Nintendo Play It Loud campaign that they did, which I think introduced people to Butthole Surfers for many people there.
Yep.
But there was a lot of shady business practices on the part of Nintendo during that time as well.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when it came to Walmart. Basically, it was difficult for Sega to get into Walmarts because Nintendo had some pretty lucrative deals with them. Basically saying, yeah, keep our stuff stocked, you won't have any problems getting them. If you happen to stock these other guys, well, maybe we don't send you enough. Yeah, that was a thing. You guys remember that?
Oh, yes, I do.
Uh-huh.
Of course, after a while, Sega did end up getting into Walmarts, and I'm not sure if Nintendo ever followed through on that, because I never seemed to have any trouble finding SNES games over there.
No. But keep in mind, though, I was always the Nintendo kid. Like, the first Sega system I owned was the Dreamcast, first and last. So, I was pretty much a Nintendo kid up until the PlayStation era.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, I would go, because like I would go to like, you know, the local renting movie, you know, the movie rental to rent games, you know, Showtime or Blockbuster or whatever. And I would see, you know, there's a Nintendo, there's a Sega, and I would go to Walmart and I would like, you know, I see plenty of Nintendo, but I wonder where that Genesis stuff is.
Yeah. They had trouble getting in there early on. And I think that kind of hurt Sega a little bit.
Yes,
you know, Walmart is, and well, was, and is probably one of the biggest retailers in North America.
Yep.
Next to that, Toys R Us as well. You know, they were a thing back then, so at least you could get Sega stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, this is stuff that's pretty... I never actually related. Unlike Brandon, while I was very much a Nintendo kid, after the NES, I got the Sega Genesis because it was black, it had better packaging, the cartridges were put in, like, plastic cases, and I thought the whole Super Nintendo thing with the... landscape view of the packaging was pretty lame and stuff like that. And I don't know
how much you knew.
I didn't have a Walmart near me either. I did all my gaming shopping at Kmart. So
Look, let me put it this way: all it took was going to one of my friend's birthday party and seeing him play Super Mario World on the SNES, and that was basically. That was all it took, really.
It's like, okay, I have to have one of these now.
So I told Mom that Christmas.
Yeah.
For me, it was Sonic 2.
Yes.
That was my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was also Streets of Rage. A lot of good memories there.
Yeah, Streets of Rage. The second one. For me, I spent a lot of time with Beyond Oasis. There's a game you haven't tried. Should definitely check out. It's one of those Zelda-style action RPGs. So worth checking out. During that time, Nintendo was also notorious for censoring games. I think the most famous example was the SNES version of Mortal Kombat. That turned out to bite them in the ass in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that
Mortal Kombat, that thing with Mortal Kombat is pretty much what killed their policy on allowing blood in their games.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that they probably would have continued to do if the whole controversy with Doom and Night Trap and all that stuff hadn't come up at around the same time anyway.
Yeah.
So
as they figured out, holy crap, we can get money this way.
Yeah. So one part of it was certainly them being smart about where people wanted what people wanted on the platform, and another part was just opportunity knocking on their door. We remember the Wolfenstein version on the SNES, which was god awful.
Oh yeah.
Had giant rats that for some reason Germans apparently used rats to attack people.
Yes.
That's a thing that happened in Nazi.
Now, the thing is, though, wasn't that purely a Nintendo of America thing, though? Because I'm pretty sure they didn't really have that issue over in Japan.
Yeah, that was really a Nintendo of America. They did have some of that in Japan, but it was because the culture is so different over there. It was a lot of stuff that ended up being okay in Japan wouldn't have been okay here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was still some of that. They were still very Puritan over there, but not to the extent that we got it over here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Oh, God, that Wolfenstein 3D. Yeah. It did lead to Super Noah's Ark 3D, one of the only unlicensed SNES games that ever released.
I think you're right there. Like, I know, like, obviously, back in the Nintendo era, they had a mountain of unlicensed software you could get if you knew where to look.
Yeah, well, but, unlicensed stuff was, stuff like the Tengen games, there were Codemasters games, there were...
But I'm also talking like Wisdom Tree, stuff like that.
Them too, yeah.
But the thing was is that because they changed the software reader or the hardware output or whatever on the SNES, it basically made it so that only, games that were approved by Nintendo could actually be played on it.
Yeah.
So that's why when Super Noah's Ark 3D came along, you remember that. Have you ever seen that particular?
I've never seen it in person. I've seen pictures.
Okay,
of it,
let me
so
tell
I know
you.
It's, okay, I know it's a past
here's the thing. The reason the only way you can actually play that is it's got a top loader on the top of the cartridge, like, the Game Gear for SNES had. So in order for it to work, you actually have to put, like, a regular licensed SNES cartridge, insert it at the top, and then insert it into the SNES for it to work.
Yeah. So, yeah,
and you couldn't play it for too long, because otherwise you'd start smelling burning plastic.
Yeah. Apparently that went away after a while, and it was fine. But
yeah.
You wouldn't want to play too long anyway, because Super Noah's Ark 3D sucked, so... yeah. Now you can play that on Steam for some reason.
Yeah, well, there's probably a lot of evangelical kids who grew up with that shit.
Yeah. So, yeah. And around that time, also, they started trying to shift generations.
Mm-hmm.
They were leading up to the N64. They had signed a deal with Silicon Graphics to develop that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be amazing. It was supposed to be the best thing since sliced bread. It was supposed to change how you would see games from now on.
And the PlayStation kind of stomped it underfoot.
That's basically what happened.
It and the Saturn.
Yeah. Not to say that the N64 was bad.
I mean, it had Super Mario 64. That game's considered like a benchmark.
Yeah. It did, set the benchmark for 3D platformers. There were a lot of PlayStation games that borrowed heavily from what Super Mario 64 did.
Well, technically, Super Mario 64 kind of sort of borrowed from the beta, from the alpha version of Croc. So,
yeah,
or at least that's what I've heard.
That's what I've heard, too.
But
actually true or not, we don't know.
Yeah. Also, you want to know what was really one of the big issues with the Nintendo 64? It didn't even have anything to do with the software.
Hmm.
It was the hardware, specifically that fucking controller.
Oh god!
The Trident.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing not made for human hands. I mean, are we aliens?
Yeah. Okay, so the idea behind the Trident was that when you were playing a 3D game, you were supposed to put your left hand or right hand. You know, I don't know if they made left-handed versions of that controller.
No, they didn't, as far as I know.
Yeah, you had to put it in the middle prong, know, where the analog stick is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first time that any fucking game system did that. So yeah. You would have all these people, you know, in the Blockbuster or the Best Buys or the Walmart or whatever, wherever they were demoing Super Mario 64, and you have all these people trying to stretch their thumb all the way down to the middle prong from the left side of the controller because, again, nobody really communicated it to anybody that you were supposed to put your hand in the middle prong, but no.
Yeah. The only hint that that was supposed to be what you were supposed to do was the fact that that the Z button was down underneath it.
Yeah,
there was no way you were stretching your finger to get to that button. Trust me, that's not happening. But yeah, the other problem with that controller was that even if you did use the correct grip, it was still uncomfortable because your hands were too damn close together.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Also, you know, you would have, like, Mario Party, where you would have those game, had those one mini game that involved you to roll around the analog stick.
The blister maker.
Yeah, which, by the way, they very specifically basically tell you you got to use the palm of your hand.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember playing Mario Party in that one weekend.
Oh, yeah, and then try to drive to work on Monday and touch the hot steering wheel. Oh,
yeah.
Pain.
Yeah.
Also, and this is really one of the other big problems with it, the software output sucked. They just didn't have, I mean, the release of new games that they had coming out on that system was a trickle compared to what had come out before.
Yeah, because they were on the wrong side of history as far as the cartridge versus CD.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah, by the time that the N64 came out, the PlayStation had already been out 2 years.
Yeah.
So, and you had, like, the Sega had been experimenting with that stuff with their various add-ons for the Genesis, which mostly didn't go well, just because of the games. They were leaning too heavily on, like, FMV.
Yeah. That didn't end up working, but, you know, suddenly Sony's here, shows that you can do this, right? If you put if you put storage there and you put the hardware behind it, and you provide developers tools that they can actually use effectively, which is another issue that the N64 had. It was notoriously difficult to develop for. So it was like, well, I can develop for this system that's coming out 2 years late, is starting behind, is limited to what I can actually do on it, or I could just, you know, develop for Sony, who's basically giving me a really much better deal. I think we know where developers ended up. There's, you know, big cases. I think we all remember Final Fantasy VII, which was supposed to be a Nintendo title for the disk drive. It was initially announced. And it just kind of quietly disappeared and then reappeared on the PlayStation. So, yeah.
And yeah, like, then you start seeing the price difference. Like, oh, these games are $40 or $50 on the PS1, and they're $70 on the N64.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because Nintendo still wanted to control production. Yeah, that didn't work so well. But, you know, there's some parallels that we can kind of draw from that Nintendo to this Nintendo that we're looking at now. As flawed as the N64 was, Nintendo was actually pretty confident in it.
Yeah.
And in the end, it actually did sell pretty well. You know,
it had Mario 64. That's like, that was pretty much the system seller.
There was that, and then Ocarina of Time, and various Pokemon games that came
out. Star Fox 64, which was a massive hit.
Yeah. Mario Kart 64.
I mean, it started a fucking internet meme. Before those were a thing.
GoldenEye a launch game?
What's that?
I don't remember.
Was GoldenEye a launch game?
GoldenEye was not a launch game, but it didn't miss it by much.
No.
There was like two launch games.
I just know that was wildly popular as well.
GoldenEye, you know, that's another release because it basically kick-started successful console first-person shooters.
Yeah.
Not just that, but multiplayer first-person shooters on
console.
Did
they find a way to do dual analog by having used two controllers for one person?
Yeah, that did work so well, but still.
And nobody really figured that out until the DualShock came out on the PS1.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this... And even then, I think there's like an infamous GameSpot review of first-person shooters. Like, who the hell would want to use, you know, the left stick to move and the right stick to strafe and aim?
Turns out everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it works.
Have the right games, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make that obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, but the parallel I'm going to draw from that Nintendo to this Nintendo is that they were very well aware that software would carry the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen as far as the Switch goes that Nintendo's putting a lot of money behind the Switch. They are putting the content out there. They know that they have to keep a steady flow of games coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got both first-party, third-party, and independent publishers on board.
And they've kind of been hit, and they've pretty much hit it out the park, left, right, and center, pretty much since launch day. So
it seems like they can pretty much put anything on there, and it sells really well for some reason.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, because unlike, you know, the other consoles, and again, granted, you know, even though it is larger, unlike those, you can with the Switch, you can actually play on the go, which you can't do with the other ones.
Yeah.
So.
And that's, for a lot of people, that's actually a very big deal. It's not a portable system that you can, in the sense that you can stick it in your pocket. It's not a 3DS or anything like that. But some people are okay with carrying a case.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, most people carry a bag or something around with them, so.
Yeah, if you got a backpack, stick it in there.
And if you have an actual commute.
Yeah.
Sort of public transportation or whatever.
Yeah. Part of me wonders, though, how long this whole Switch, basically the golden era of the indie publisher on the Switch, is going to last. Because at some point you hit saturation.
Yeah.
At some point it becomes hard for games to get exposure. Steam runs into this problem. Well, yeah, Steam is impossible to get.
It is a problem.
That's because they make it a little too easy to get on there.
Yeah.
And then you get... anything anybody wants to make on there.
Yeah. Nintendo.
Well, at least in this, Nintendo's still carrying shop. I would say that because Nintendo might be a little bit more stingy about what they allow on the console.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll actually serve them better.
Yeah. They just need to do some serious updates to the eShop.
Yeah.
You know, from what I've seen of it, it's as far as finding games is still a problem.
Yeah, if it doesn't fit into like three categories on there that you can find new stuff, like new releases, the best sellers, and the deal section. If it's not in there, you have a hard time finding it unless you just want to look at a list of everything that's on the eShop.
Yeah.
As far as I know, there's no genres, filters, or anything like that on the eShop.
No. Nothing that's like surfaced to the front of the eShop. You can do that in the search, but that's not a great way to do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to just see like, hey, you like RPGs? Here's RPGs that are on the Switch.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to go through the search just to figure out what's on it.
Yeah.
Should be some curation and such that highlights, you know, cool stuff that's on there.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll get there, because... yeah, it would be a shame if you know, people are expecting their games to do well and then find out that, well, nobody's even aware that their game exists. So, we kind of strayed from Nintendo of the 90s, but that's okay. We pretty much covered pretty much everything, I would guess. I mean, we could go back to the 80s, but let's not do that. That would be another half hour, 45-minute discussion of what the hell happened in that decade. So let's just move on to our picks of the week for the weekend. And I'm going to start us off with more storage, because we need more storage.
Please.
Good deal for us Canadians here. $200 for a external 8-terabyte drive. Mm-hmm. Which I actually compared the prices, and the 8 terabyte was actually less expensive than the 6. I'm not sure how long this deal is going to last. So for you Canadians here who are looking for something for your PS4 or your Xbox One, you can get an 8 terabyte for a pretty decent price, which should be enough to store 2, maybe 3 games. I'm joking, of course.
Not too far off.
Well, yeah. Eventually, if you've got an Xbox One X, these 4K assets are gigantic. So yeah, your 100 gig installs are not uncommon on that system.
No.
Yeah. You know,
keep that in mind. So that's my pick: $200 on Amazon for a Seagate 8 terabyte external. Check it out if you need one.
Yeah. All right. Well, I couldn't really think of something, so I decided to just post the definitive list of Mario cameos, because part of the fun of old Nintendo was trying to find places where they would shove Mario in.
That's cool.
Yeah, just he's the guy who's doing the refereeing, in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, or, he's the guy up there on the chair with tennis, or, he just makes sudden appearance during Link's Awakening, He just shows up. Or he's in Link of the Past, he's the picture in the ends on the portrait. Or, he just sort of shows up out of freaking nowhere and does weird stuff. He shows up when you're playing that stupid minigame collection that came with the Super Scope.
Yeah.
Riding a rocket.
While Dr. Strangelove.
While, Bowser is also riding a rocket, chasing him with a whip. It's just fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of wish they'd start doing that again. Anyways. So, Teresa, what do you got?
For people who subscribe to Netflix, there is a new Netflix anime offering from Sanrio. It's called Aggretsuko.
Yeah.
So, it has this little panda named Retsuko, and she is fresh out of school and ready to get a job. And then reality quickly sets in, and she tries to deal with her job emotions by going to the karaoke bar
and screaming death metal.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's pretty cute. Not cute, but it's maybe a little too realistic. But great 15-minute episodes. That's for not spending any additional money other than what you're already going to be spending for the month. But if you're rich, you could get Labo.
Yeah.
And we have the variety pack.
Yeah, that's the starter kit, basically?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And the house has been constructed. The little RC car has been constructed. And part of the kit went to another person's house where they're doing a team build. So we'll see how the piano looks when it returns.
If Nintendo is smart, they're going to start holding competitions.
They really should.
Oh, yeah.
Get the Boy Scouts of America involved or something. You got the Soapbox Derby, let's do the Labo Derby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially since they have that Labo, basically like the freeform one that you can
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Start this and you'll start seeing folks using it, they'll start making Labo little Rube Goldberg contraptions,
Yeah.
I already mentioned that Nintendo's marketing is going crazy. I mean, they have Bill Nye rocking this stuff, so.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't hear that.
Bill Nye is talking
Labo. If you go on Nintendo's YouTube, you see Bill Nye doing all sorts of cool Labo stuff.
So yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I mean, he's an engineer by trade, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, this is going to be
And, of course, if you do, don't look at the comment section. No.
Well, no.
But, well, no, because everybody knows this by now, right? You know, he had his show on Netflix.
Yeah.
And he did that one episode on gender.
Yeah.
And you know how the internet reacted to that?
Yeah. Well, part of the internet. Just the idiots, yeah, basically.
The ones that know how to use bot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, blah. And you have the plans to get the mech kit, Teresa?
Yes, actually, I do, because the grandmother ended up buying. I felt really bad. I didn't think it was going to be that much. I tried sending her in with my card while I circled because we couldn't get a parking space. And kiddo convinced her to pick this one up and take it to the checkout. And $75 later, so I guess the $80 will come from my first paycheck. And so, yeah, after tax, it is a bit of money, but the problem is, where does all this stuff get stored when it's not being used?
Yeah. Sell Labo cases.
Yeah, I'm thinking about making a modified weapon rack, basically, behind our TV.
Yeah.
So, that works. But yeah.
The UPS video of them making a box to fit all that stuff?
No.
Making a
Labo. So, Teresa, are you going to review Labo as a mother or as a gamer?
Oh, as a gamer. Well, maybe as a right. Maybe.
There you go.
So, yeah, that may take just a wee bit of time because of work. But, I'm looking forward to this. And some of these look like they're going to be pretty long builds. So,
mm-hmm.
That's what I like about the Labo.
I'd love to see how they look like.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that I'm really liking about the Labo. Like when we initially saw it, it looked like it was going to be something kind of, you know, chintzy and not all that substantial. But no, there's a lot to this, and with that freeform tool that's in there, it gives the kids, you know, the ability to see how stuff works, to learn engineering concepts, and then with the freeform, just start applying them to their own projects. And, you know, this is valuable.
If I'll be honest, if they can get like schools involved on this, middle schools and high schools, or hell, even grade schools, having their science clubs get on this shit, Nintendo's looking at a whole new market here. So
all the people who are into Makers Guild and things like that, they should be jumping on this.
I think the only con that we can pretty much all agree on is the price.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a big ask.
Yeah.
I mean, what I would recommend is for Nintendo to come up with a smaller, more affordable Switch model that could be made specifically used with the Labo.
I know that they will eventually rev the Switch, so a Switch S, we'll see.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
All right, so Labo and Death Metal Anime. I'm into that. How about you, Chris?
So I have something not so great to talk about. We lost a good member of the gaming media about a week or so ago, Andrew Fitch. People might know from 1UP and EGM back in the day. He was a big member of that team, especially for people that like their JRPGs. He was one of the first people I saw sort of publicly talking about Persona, especially 3, when that came out, as well as talking about Persona 4 and Lost Odyssey, and was a big force as well over there at their sports game stuff, being sort of a dual threat nerd, being able to go all the way for the sports stuff as well as the nerdy Japanese stuff. And unfortunately, he, or at least his friends, had announced that he had gotten cancer a couple months ago, and unfortunately passed away about a week or so ago. Very much was a big force over there at EGM and 1UP. I was on the Geekbox once. A bunch of those people got fired. Eventually replaced by his twin brother, which I was presented some weird stuff in the form of a podcast, considering they sound alike.
Yeah.
You just got to know their eccentricities, where his twin brother is more into... He works at Natsume. Hmm. So he's into localization and I think was learning Russian.
Yeah.
As well as some of his other languages. Lost a good one. He was working at EGM Now, the new form of EGM.
Yeah.
Lost a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad.
It's sad. A couple of months for cancer. That was.
I think he got cancer a while ago. It's just they didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
I know you got a lot of messages from fans and friends and such that he got to read before he went.
Yeah. Mm.
You can definitely find some good stuff from him on YouTube. Look up 1UP Show Lost Odyssey.
Mm.
There's a big segment from Andrew Fritsch sort of proclaiming his love for Lost Odyssey. A lot of good stuff from him.
Yeah. Cancer sucks, you know that?
Mm-hmm.
It sure does.
Yeah.
Sucks.
So on that note, I guess we'll end the show. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So remember, if you're not subscribed to the show, you can do so via Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast aggregator. You can also find us at smashpad.com, where we've got written reviews. God of War review coming. We've got some good stuff there. Way Out review got posted a few days ago, so check that. Far Cry 5 review also there. Might want to check that out. We kind of took our time with that one, so... I am Filippo Dinolfo.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Teresa Sammons.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dan Reb Victoria.
And we'll see you all next week on the Day Zero Update.